And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Friday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, a full breakdown of round one of the NFL draft. I'll give you all my biggest takeaways from last night. How did the Panthers and Falcons do? What did last night's draft show us about the direction of the sport? Who were some maybe winners or losers? Plus, we'll go through the official mock draft of the Morrow Midday Show and see how we did. Which of these picks last night have the best chance to hit or the highest rate to bust? We'll also talk about the NBA playoffs. The Sixers advanced last night. Some really interesting second-round matchups with a lot of legacies on the line. What are the best house pets? And a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. Ronald Acuna returned last night. Problems with name, image, and likeness. And plenty more as we continue to get ready for day two and three of the NFL draft. We'll break it all down over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Friday, a football Friday, with round one of the draft last night. Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing good. What a great night it was last night. Yes. Everything we could have imagined from the NFL draft, it happened. So many trades. Great night of the NBA playoffs as well. My mock did terribly, but hey, it's all good, Luke. That's what draft season is all about. It was an awesome night, Luke. Glad to be here on this beautiful Friday.
Yeah, it was. It was a fun night. A fun first round. I was talking about this yesterday, but with all of the intrigue and the unknown, I think it made for a more interesting night. And you were sitting there last night wondering what is going to happen next. And then you'd be surprised at the outcomes. We'll break down the mock draft coming up and see how bad it truly was, or maybe how impressive it was. We'll find out coming up in just a little bit. But let me start with this. Let me get to, I'm going to unload all my takeaways from last night. First, let's focus in on the Panthers and the Falcons as they made their selections. And in both cases, I thought they filled the position of need. For the Panthers, the more glaring need is quarterback, but I thought you had a better chance trying to get a lineman last night at number 6 than quarterback, assuming they go out and try to get a veteran quarterback. If the plan now is simply, okay, we're good with Sam Darnold, we improved the offensive line for him, let's get ready for the season, I think that would be a mistake. But if you're going to draft that lineman last night at number 6, that's the first half of the job. And it was a job well done. But the job's not finished. If you're Carolina, I think you have to go out and get a Baker Mayfield or a Jimmy Garoppolo. And we knew they weren't going to be moved last night or even during this draft. It's going to come afterwards. It'd be next week or a week later. Or you could try to wait it out and hope those teams will just simply release the guys. Play a little hardball and wait until Cleveland or San Francisco releases those quarterbacks because they have no suitors. And you could just swoop in and scoop them up. But if I'm Carolina last night, I draft an offensive lineman. I feel good about the pick. I think it's a good selection for the Panthers, but I think it's only half of the job. Don't just settle for Sam Darnold coming back as your quarterback now with a rookie offensive lineman added to the mix as if that's going to fix everything. For the Falcons, they too addressed, I thought, the biggest need at number 8. It's a good wide receiver class. They certainly need playmakers on both sides of the football. I would devote a lot of the rest of the picks now to defense. But I like that you go wide receiver. Now, we could all debate. I'm sure we all have a different favorite wide receiver. And when you look at who was available on the board and who the Falcons could have taken, right, we could all have our – it's personal preference. We all have our different takes on it. I'm curious to see how the pick plays. I don't know if it's where I would have gone in that direction. I mean, the concern is the lack of speed at the wide receiver position. First, let's backtrack to the Falcons and why wide receiver is so important. I made the case yesterday that, well, obviously they have no playmakers. I made the case that I would go with Williams out of Alabama and allow him to sit the entire year if he has to. Or if you don't see him until Thanksgiving, that's fine too. No problem. Because if you're the Falcons, you're in no rush. You're not trying to win right now. You're not going to win right now. So focus on next year when hopefully you get Calvin Ridley back. And then you have Ridley, and then you have Pitts, and then you have who many believe is the most talented wide receiver in this class who would be healthy a year from now, in Jameson Williams out of Alabama. But Atlanta went with Drake London instead out of USC. Now, we talked about London earlier the week on the show, and I am very, very intrigued by Drake London. I think he's a good wide receiver. Will he be better than the wide receivers that were left on the board after him? Time will tell. I like that Drake London was most important to his offense of any wide receiver in the country. USC had to rely on him more than other guys. And so I think back to somebody like a Calvin Johnson, right? When the defense can just zero in on you and you still put up 2,000 yards, that is pretty remarkable in the case of Calvin Johnson. When the defense can just focus in on you, you're the only guy they have, and Drake London still puts up over 1,000 yards while missing a third of the season, that's impressive. The concerns are kind of the lack of speed. He's got size, 6'4". Does he have speed where he could create separation? But sometimes speed can be overrated. I think back to first-round draft picks for wide receivers that people fell in love with because of their speed. There's one you may be familiar with, Troy Williamson, out of South Carolina, who was drafted to be the replacement of Randy Moss, and he couldn't catch a cold. He was terrible, and he was quickly out of the league. Sure, he was fast, but he couldn't catch the ball. He would blow past guys, have walk-in touchdowns, and would drop them. If the football was a spear, Troy Williamson wouldn't make it past his rookie season. He would have been dead. The amount of balls he dropped that hit him in the numbers, he was terrible. What a bust. Somebody with a lot of speed. Darius Heyward-Bey, one of the faster wide receivers we've had in the draft process. Never really lived up to expectations. You know, kind of like Ted Ginn Jr. Good return guy. He had a long career. He was a role player, but never a great wide receiver, and he was drafted high in the first round. We could go on and on of a lot of guys with speed that, sure, they can be quick out there and maybe blow past a defender, but are they good enough route runners? Do they have the hands? Are they good enough to actually make the big-time plays? There's more to it than just speed. So I have some concerns or questions about Drake London, but we've also seen the other side of the equation where we have guys who are just speedy wide receivers that fail. Drake London's a talented wide receiver where people are concerned about his ability to separate or speed in the open field, and he's very young. He's going to turn 21 in July, so there's more room to grow with Drake London. I'm curious to see how the pick works out. I don't know if it's the direction I would have gone in. Doesn't mean it was a bad pick. I know a lot of people may not be too favorable. But if you're the Falcons, you certainly had to go wide receiver. That's the wide receiver they like. Now let's get to takeaways from the draft. I have three things from last night that show the direction we're moving in the NFL. Number one, the Rams have made draft picks expendable. We know that. They were not picking last night. It's going to be a while till they pick at all in this draft. The Rams don't care about draft picks. And other teams are starting to feel the same way. Entering the draft last night, we already had 25 of the first 82 picks that were involved in trades. And then last night, we had a record-setting 9 different trades in the first round. So you have a large portion of the league that does not care. They've already traded away those picks, or they're trading them last night. We saw the Eagles trade away draft picks for A.J. Brown. The Cardinals trade away a first-round pick for Marquise Brown. Right, not concerned with draft picks. There are still some teams that are falling behind. Those are the teams that are on the receiving end of these trades. But we had 9 different trades last night. So half of the league sees what the Rams accomplished, winning a Super Bowl, saying F the picks. And they're thinking, hey, you know what? We can be a little more aggressive with our draft picks as well. Then you have the other half of the league that's acquiring those draft picks, thinking, well, these are still crucial. And everybody's situation is different. If you're a rebuilding team, you probably prefer the draft picks. Try to compile talent and young talent, cheap talent at that. But a lot of more teams, right, we saw more trades last night than ever before. There's a change of the guard here in the NFL that more teams are going to be willing to part with their draft picks, including first-round picks. And what we saw last night may not be the outlier. It could become the norm, where every year we get these wild trades with a lot of picks. 25 of 82 picks had already been traded. the first 82 picks, at the start of the draft, and then 9 more trades last night. Second takeaway in terms of the direction of the sport, the first 5 picks last night were defense. Second time that's ever happened, first time since 1991. And then we had 3 offensive linemen that went in the top 10. First time that's happened in a decade. Quarterbacks have become so important that the first 12 picks, it went defensive players to offensive linemen to wide receivers. That was the progression through the first dozen picks last night. And quarterbacks have become so important that last night, those first 12 picks, they were all either to protect the quarterback, to sack the quarterback, or to catch a pass from the quarterback. Those are the most important things now. And if there were good enough quarterbacks, they would have gone in the first 12 picks as well. Like last year, when we had the first 3 picks come off the board as quarterbacks and 5 in the first 15 picks for the first time in a long time a year ago in the draft. This year, quarterbacks aren't so good, so they think, okay, well, what else can we do involving the quarterback? We got to protect him. We got to get after the other team's quarterback, and we have to have guys who can catch the ball from a quarterback. Meanwhile, no running backs drafted in the first round for the first time in 8 years. Running backs are not important, right? Tight ends even, and even linebackers. There are a couple, right? The Packers got a linebacker, but a lot of linebackers are falling on draft boards because linebackers, when it comes to passing, you're taking linebackers off the field. You're putting more defensive backs out there. The league obviously has moved to such a pass-happy league. We've seen that with the wide receivers and all the movement this offseason. And last night, the first 12 picks, either offensive lineman, defensive lineman to get after the quarterback, or then we got to some wide receivers to catch the ball from the quarterback. Which takes me to my third takeaway, kind of blended there at number 2. That we had 2 wide receivers traded last night. We had 6 wide receivers taken in the first 18 picks. That's a record. We are seeing inflation of the importance of the wide receiver position, and it is something we have talked about this offseason. But wide receivers are increasing in power. And so then in response, the Bills and the Chiefs, we believe maybe the 2 best teams in the AFC, what do? They both traded up to get cornerbacks last night in the first round. Because the AFC is deep. There's a lot of quarterback talent. Now, wide receivers are all on the move. These teams are adding a bunch of wide receivers. And these 2 Super Bowl hopefuls felt like they needed to keep up. And they said, we got to go get some help in our secondary. And that's what they did last night. But the importance, or at least the perceived importance, of the wide receiver position continues to increase. They're the second highest paid position now in the league, and last night we had 6 wide receivers go in the first 18 picks. As I've been saying this offseason, I think the bubble is going to burst somewhat soon, kind of like the running back position. It wasn't that long ago that teams were giving Christian McCaffrey and Ezekiel Elliott these big-time deals, and we didn't think much of it at the time. We did on the Mara Midday Show, but most people didn't really have a problem with it. And then very quickly you realize, like, wow, that was a mistake. And now nobody's paying running backs, and no running backs were drafted last night, and I don't know if any are going to go in the second round tonight. And I think some teams, like the Titans, are already realizing at the wide receiver position, things are getting out of control quick, and we're not going along with it. And I think in a few years, right, we're going to look back and say, can you believe they gave Christian Kirk over $20 million? The Eagles paid $100 million and gave up a first-round pick for A.J. Brown? I think the bubble's going to burst down the road, and we'll look back on a lot of this stuff and wonder, what were these teams doing? Right now, it seems like the move. I don't know if it works out in the long term. And then lastly, on my long list of takeaways from last night's draft, and of course we'll break it down throughout the afternoon, let's get to some superlatives. Favorite drafts. I really like the Jets. I think most people would say the Jets won the draft, and I can understand why. The Jets had 3 picks in the first round last night, which is good for a rebuilding team. You're able to bring in talent and young, cheap talent. That's good. That's what you need. And the Jets, I thought, nailed on paper. Who knows? All 3 could bust for all we know. But on paper, for what we know right now going into this draft, I thought they nailed all 3 picks. You get Sauce Gardner. You get Jermaine Johnson, both on defense. The defense was horrendous last year. Now you add a really good pass rusher, and who many believe was the best defensive back. And then you get Garrett Wilson on the offensive side, a talented wide receiver to pair him with your young quarterback. I thought the Jets had a great draft. Who knows if these picks will actually work out? But I do not see an issue with the process, with the thought process, with the players they selected. There were no questions. You didn't wonder, like, why? Why did they take that guy? Wow, they reached for that guy. No, you understand what they were thinking. Doesn't mean it's going to work. But I can't fault the effort for the Jets last night. They put together my favorite draft. I also like the Giants sticking in New York. The Giants got Kayvon Thibodeau and then Evan Neal. And Evan Neal's regarded as the best lineman, and the Giants needed to improve their offensive line. And there's a lot of concerns about, you know, Thibodeau, does he actually like football? He had that awkward handshake with Roger Goodell last night. He's going to be in New York, the Big Apple, bright lights, Broadway. Is that going to be distracting? But he's a heck of a talent as well. So the Giants got a good pass rusher and a good pass protector as they add two talented pieces while addressing their needs. Other drafts I liked. The Eagles. You get Jordan Davis at number 13. Seems like good value there. And then you bring in A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown, we'll find out, right, if you could find a first-round talent in this draft as good as A.J. Brown. We'll see. I like what the Eagles did. And now you give Jalen Hurts another weapon at the wide receiver position, and you have those draft picks still in your back pocket to try to get a quarterback next year while building a decent wide receiving duo in Philadelphia. I liked what the Lions did. You get Hutchinson at number 2. You trade back up with a divisional team, by the way. And you get maybe the most talented wide receiver in Williams at 12. And we could debate about the first overall pick, but at least in terms of polished, Hutchinson's believed to be the best pass rusher entering the draft. Williams, when healthy, may be the best wide receiver. So the Lions, potentially, if things work out, could have just added the best of the defensive line and the best of the wide receivers. We'll see. But I like the move for the Detroit Lions. And the Ravens. You get Kyle Hamilton at number 14, who is believed to be the number one safety. Everyone's going to compare him to like an Ed Reed. And you get what many believe was the number one center. And I thought you took Arizona to the cleaners. You got a first-round pick for Marquise Brown. I thought the Ravens were on the winning side of that deal. I thought Baltimore had a good night as well. Most teams that had multiple picks on paper, I thought nailed it last night. Check back in about 5 years, and we'll see if that's still the case. Along the superlatives, if I said the smartest team, I'm going to say, and I'm sure I'm in the minority here, the Tennessee Titans. And I've been going back and forth with my buddy, who is a Titans fan, who's very upset about this trade with A.J. Brown. But it's something I've been talking about on the show for weeks. Instead of overpaying for these wide receivers, just replace them with younger, cheaper talent in the first round. That's what the Titans did. They traded away A.J. Brown, and they went out and drafted a wide receiver that's been compared to Deebo Samuel instead, hoping that he can be the replacement. And you could say, right, well, A.J. Brown's so good. How are they going to? You already have the guy you're now hoping you just drafted last night. You got rid of A.J. Brown just to try to start that process over again when you could have just kept A.J. But there's a lot of things here with the Titans. Number one, they were 25th in pass attempts last year, and number one in rushing attempts. They ran the football more than they threw it last year. Now, that may be too old school for the NFL, but that's how the Titans run their offense. And so the Titans probably view the wide receiver position maybe more as a luxury and thinking, we're not going to break the bank for a wide receiver when it's more about our run game. And A.J. Brown ended up getting $100 million from the Eagles. He is now the third highest paid wide receiver for the total amount of money in a contract. A.J. Brown, third highest paid wide receiver. So if you're the Titans, he skipped voluntary workouts, cut off communication with the team, turned down their offer, and you're thinking, man, we're going to have to go up to $25 million a year for an offense that runs it more than anybody? And Ryan Tannehill, who certainly could use the help, but it's not like you have some sort of franchise quarterback there. It's more about the run game. I understand the move from the Titans. And instead of breaking the bank for a receiver who was just injured, didn't have 1,000 yards, and by the way, I'm very curious to see, this is not to take anything away from A.J. Brown, but when you're playing in Philadelphia, as opposed to Tennessee, the team that runs it the most, and you get some more favorable matchups on the outside, I'm curious to see if that affects the output of A.J. Brown moving forward. But I love this move from the Titans. I would probably hate it if I was a Titans fan, but I think it's a shrewd business decision. Instead of giving in to the demands and breaking the bank at the wide receiver position, which I don't think is necessary, trade away that wide receiver and go get younger, cheaper talent that you hope will be just as good. Brown was not a first-round pick. And when you look at the highest paid wide receivers, they've all been moved this offseason. This is what I'm talking about this bubble eventually bursting. But the wide receiver position right now is bringing in all the money. And when you look at some of the most talented wide receivers in the league, most of them are not first-round picks. I think you can find talented wide receivers anywhere. Since 2019, the three wide receivers that lead the league over the past three seasons in yards per route are A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel. What do they all have in common? They've all come into the league in the last 3 years, and they're all drafted outside of the top 20. And statistically, they've been maybe the three most effective wide receivers. So wide receivers can have an immediate impact, including ones that are not taken in the top 20. You could get a wide receiver in the second round, and within a year or two, they can become one of the best receivers in the league. I like the move for the Titans. I'm sure I'm in the minority. For the superlative of two on the nose, you got to say the Packers for not drafting a wide receiver. Just too good to be true. Right, it's been now 20 years. It's the longest streak in the league of not taking a skilled player, quote-unquote skilled player, in the first round. And I know six wide receivers were taken before the Packers were even on the clock, but you had two first-round picks, you knew what you needed, and still It's almost comical. It's almost like they're trolling Aaron Rodgers, right, to not take a wide receiver still. I love it. We'll see what they do in the second round. For the superlative of he just can't change. You know, they used to write in your yearbook, right, don't ever change. That's the case for Trent Baalke, who once again, at the first overall pick, went with the athlete over the safer pick, like when he was in San Francisco and he took Alden Smith over J.J. Watt. Last night, same idea. Passed on the safer pick of Hutchinson and went more with the athlete. We'll see if it works out in Jacksonville. But if I have the number one pick and I have a terrible franchise, I don't know how big of a risk I'd be willing to take at first overall. And lastly, let's combine two in one. The biggest reach, we believe, on paper, the Patriots taking Cole Strange in the first round out of the Southern Conference. Cole Strange went from blocking down the road here at Johnson Haygood Stadium to now he's going to be on the starting offensive line for Bill Belichick a few months later for the Patriots coming out of the first round. And Cole Strange may be a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. We'll see. But it's just the fact that you probably didn't need to reach for him in the first round. I don't know how many other teams would have taken him in the first two rounds. The consensus big board had him as the 104th best prospect, which puts you in the fourth round. That was quite the reach. And I've always said, what are my rules when it comes to the draft? One of them is only reach for a quarterback. You could get an offensive lineman. You may love Cole Strange and think he's going to be the best in this class. I think you could draft somebody else and not notice a huge difference in the next round. Or just wait and get Cole Strange in the second round. You don't need to go all in on him in the first round on the offensive line. That was certainly the biggest reach, which takes me lastly to the biggest college football winners of the night. And of course, Chattanooga. A first-round pick for the Mocs out of the Southern Conference, and everybody talking about it now, even if they're mocking the, pun intended, mocking the pick. Right, that's great for Chattanooga, and it's great for them and their recruiting and for the Southern Conference, big time, to see Cole Strange go in the first round. Other college football winners, Georgia. They had five players drafted in the first round. The ACC had four. The Pac-12 had four. The Big 12 had zero. Georgia had more players taken than any other conference outside of their own in the first round. That's how good that defense was. Which means that the SEC, they had 11 players in total drafted in the first round. So almost 35% of the picks last night played in the SEC. But tell me again about this bias. I guess it has crept into the NFL as well. Everybody with a bias towards the SEC. A third of the picks last night in the first round came from the SEC. And lastly, the other winner, I would say Ohio State. Because we went through a stretch there where three straight picks, 10, 11, and 12, were wide receivers who at one time were all in the same wide receiving room at Ohio State. That's pretty good for an offensive coach, Ryan Day, to go out and recruit and say, hey, look what I can do for you if you play offense, specifically the wide receiver position. For a long time, Ohio State was not producing NFL wide receivers. You'd have to go back to Ted Ginn Jr., the aforementioned Ted Ginn Jr., back 15 years ago for the last time we had a first-round pick for Ohio State. And then in the last 6 years, since Ryan Day's arrival, you have Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Michael Thomas, and let's give them credit for all three guys last night. I know Williams went to Alabama, but started there. Three wide receivers in the top 12 last night. That looks good for Ryan Day now going to wide receivers' homes and say, look at all the wide receiver talent we're putting in the league over the past 6 years. Right, six guys that are pretty excitable. But I'll also say, bringing it back to my wide receiver conversation, maybe it's apples versus oranges, but Ohio State didn't win a championship with all that wide receiver talent. Maybe we can't compare college football to the NFL, but don't go all in on wide receivers. There are more important things to build a team, especially when you're working with a salary cap. That's why I did like the Titans move last night. Those are all, maybe not all, but those are most of the takeaways as I was watching the draft last night. The many things I thought about throughout that first round. We'll continue to break it down throughout the afternoon, including when we come back, it's time to put the mock draft to the test. Let's see how the official mock draft of the Morrow Midday Show did last night and did compared to the other experts as well. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. How did our official mock draft do? We're about to find out here on the Morrow Midday Show. Breaking down night one of the NFL draft. Don't worry, the fun continues tonight and tomorrow as well, and we'll be back to break it all down on Monday as well. But let's run through this mock draft and see how things went. Now, first, before we get to that, and we'll go pick by pick and break it all down, don't you worry. But, Trent, as you looked at last night's draft and based off of expectations for you, what was the biggest surprise in last night's first round? There may have been many. What was the biggest surprise that stood out to you from last night?
Besides all the trades that happened kind of in the middle of the round, Luke, I'd have to say we started talking about it the day before the draft is the Derek Stingley to Houston. I didn't think upcoming to the draft. I said there's no way that they're actually going to take Derek Stingley with a third overall pick. But sure enough, of course, they did. And besides that, I mean, yeah, the trades were just unbelievable. The A.J. Brown trade was massive. And it was just a great night of drafting, Luke.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun. As we always say, right, Vegas always knows. Now, look, a lot of people were more into Trayvon Walker at number one to the Jags than Stingley to number three. But those two were becoming big favorites, and they both came through. Number one and number three, there really wasn't, in the end, much of a doubt about it. So make sure you follow Vegas because they know what they're talking about.
I also thought it was strange that Jermaine Johnson III fell so far down the board. I was very surprised by that.
I think it was Ian Rappaport had the tweet that said media members were higher on him than NFL evaluators. So we'll see. But it seems like good value for the Jets and part of what looked like a really good first round put together by the New York Jets, getting three on paper, three talented pieces for that rebuilding team. All right, so let's do this. We did our mock draft all week. We spent time on it, and we gave you picks 1 through 16. And then yesterday also added on 22, 24, 32. Now, obviously, there were a bunch of trades, so things got all out of control. But let's go through this. We're going to go pick by pick and see how we did. So now, number one, I'll give what actually happened. You tell me what you had. We'll compare notes. Obviously, last night, number one pick, Trayvon Walker, went to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And, Luke, we did have Trayvon Walker going to the Jags. We were locked in from day one.
All right, we're off and rolling.
Here we go.
1-0. At number two, the Lions took Aiden Hutchinson.
We also had Aiden Hutchinson go at number two, so we're off to a good start.
2-0. Now, this was where things took a little bit of a surprising turn. We talked about it yesterday, as Trent mentioned. This started to get some buzz leading up to the draft, and it ended up playing out as some started to expect. But at number three, the Houston Texans took Derek Stingley Jr. out of LSU.
Luke, we had Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon going third overall, so we missed on that one, unfortunately. But we should have known. Writing was on the wall.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, we had already submitted
yep.
the third overall pick, and we stick with our guns around here. We weren't going to change the mock draft.
Oh, I would have changed it if there was changes being allowed.
As soon as I saw them. No changes allowed. Mel Kiper, get your mock draft 6.0 out of here. You make one mock draft, you stick to it. Enough of these changes. Stick with your gut.
It is cheating a little bit
to make so many. Seriously. If you're going to do that, then just wait until the week of and come out with the final mock draft. Get out of here with all your changes. Number four, the Jets took Sauce Gardner out of Cincinnati.
And we had Sauce Gardner going to the Jets. There it is. Not a bad start. 3-1.
Reports are that since he's playing in New Jersey, he's going to have to change his name from Sauce Gardner to Gravy Gardner. Didn't turn. Number five, the Giants took Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon. What do we have?
Luke, we had them taking Evan Neal with the fifth overall pick.
Okay, so now this is interesting because if I fast forward, the Giants took Evan Neal at number seven.
Right.
Who did you have at number seven?
I had Derek Stingley going at number seven to the Giants. Yep.
All right. So now technically you counted the Evan Neal at seven to the same team, right? He went to the Giants
right.
at five. No, he went to the Giants at seven. Let me try to keep this all straight. You mocked him going five.
Going five. Yes, sir.
So you count that as incorrect.
I count that as incorrect. Got to be the pick. Got to be right, Luke.
Yeah.
I know Mel's going to probably say, well, we couldn't have these trades, and so I'm pretty much, steadfast on my top 10. No, not me, Luke. I take it how it is.
All right. That's fair. I mean, you nailed the right the combination there, but not at the right time, so I guess tough graders will say incorrect. You get half credit. Number six, the Panthers. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but you got this one right, right?
Yeah, Ikem Ekwonu out of North Carolina State, offensive tackle. We did get that one right, Luke.
Okay. Now we're up to number eight with the Atlanta Falcons. They took Drake London, the wide receiver, out of the other USC. Who did we have?
I had Garrett Wilson, wide receiver out of Ohio State, going to Atlanta, but they instead went with a bigger guy.
Yeah, which I think was surprising. And Wilson was the next wide receiver off the board. Number nine, the Seahawks took Charles Cross, lineman out of Mississippi State.
We had Charles Cross going number nine at Mississippi State. Yep.
And then number 10, the aforementioned Garrett Wilson. That's when he came off the board to the Jets, wide receiver out of Ohio State. Who did you have at number 10?
We had Drake London going there to number 10. Yeah, so kind of, flip and flopping a lot of these picks right now, Luke.
See, that's not bad, though. You're not way off.
No.
You're not putting, Chris Strange in the first round, or Cole Strange. Don't even remember his name. You're not putting Cole Strange in the first round. So, yeah, you're right on this thing. Number 11, the Saints took Chris Olave, the wide receiver out of Ohio State.
This is when trades started getting crazy. I had the Washington Commanders taking Kyle Hamilton, safety at Notre Dame. Now, Luke, this is when everything kind of gets going downhill.
Yeah, because at number 12, the Lions traded up with the Vikings. As a Vikings fan, I hated this move for a multitude of reasons, let alone it's the team in your division you're helping out. And the Lions came up and grabbed Jameson Williams out of Alabama, who, when healthy, people believe may be the best wide receiver. You're welcome, Detroit. And so, again, when you know, it's hard to forecast trades. So the Lions take Williams. Who did you have going at number 12?
I have Minnesota taking Jermaine Johnson, the third linebacker. So, yeah, that was very, very wrong with all these trades.
So far, that may have been the biggest miss in terms of when the player went.
Yes,
right, because he ended up going in the 20s. Otherwise, you've been right on all this stuff. Number 13, the Eagles. Again, this was another trade, right? The Eagles moved up, took Jordan Davis, the lineman out of Georgia.
Yeah, we had Houston trading with Kansas City to take Jameson Williams. So we were a little off there.
Well, half credit, though. You knew they were going to trade.
Yeah, I did think they would move out of that one, no doubt.
Number 14, this is when Kyle Hamilton came off the board to the Ravens, the safety out of Notre Dame. What'd you have at 14?
I had them taking Jordan Davis, who went 13. So I guess Philly, Philly just didn't want the Ravens to have a guy like Jordan Davis.
Yeah. And then 15, the Texans took Kenyon Green, lineman out of Texas A&M. What do we have at 15?
I had Philly taking Chris Olave out of Ohio State, the wide receiver, and he went very early. I was very surprised about that one as well, the Saints moving up that quickly to go get Olave. But I think it's a good pick, and we'll see if Michael Thomas plays football. So they'll complement each other very well if he's on the field.
He may be the next wide receiver to get moved this offseason.
Yeah.
That was another one of those trades, so hard to forecast. 16th, the Commanders took Jahan Dotson, wide receiver out of Penn State.
Yeah, I had New Orleans trading with the Steelers to take Malik Willis, and obviously that didn't happen.
Yes. So now we know Kenny Pickett, of course, the only quarterback to come off the board at number 20 to the Steelers. We'll see what happens with Malik Willis, I imagine pretty early tonight in the second round, I would think. Other picks that we tacked on to our mock draft, the Packers at 22. To Quay Walker, linebacker out of Georgia. What did you have?
I had them taking a wide receiver, Treylon Burks out of Arkansas, and he obviously went to Tennessee. So, yeah, the Packers just doing Packers things, going on the defense. Great players, Luke. I'm excited to have them on the roster. Welcome to Green Bay, but it would have been nice to get at least one weapon.
Yeah, I was somewhat surprised. It just seemed too perfect. All right. Once again, they didn't add any offensive talent in the first round.
As soon as pick, I think 16 happened with Jahan Dotson, I said, "Oh, they're going defense. Like, there's no way."
A record-setting six wide receivers in the first 18 picks. That does make it a little challenging. Right? You don't want to reach. Maybe you only had a first-round grade on six wide receivers. You could get the next guy in the second round, but still, it was just too perfect. The Cowboys at number 24. They took Tyler Smith, the lineman out of Tulsa. Now, if I remember correctly, before we get to who you had here, but if I remember correctly, they told the story last night that Tyler Smith had some sort of condition with his legs. The doctors had to, like, re-break his legs.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Was that Tyler Smith?
I believe so.
I think so. Quite the story. Now today, he's 6'5", 324 pounds. But something, he was born, like, bow-legged, and so they had to reconstruct his legs almost by breaking the bones and reorganizing them. Crazy. And now he's an NFL lineman. So congrats to Tyler Smith out of Tulsa being drafted by the Cowboys last night at 24th. Who'd you have there?
I had Kenyon Green going to the Dallas Cowboys, another lineman, but he went a lot earlier than people were expecting, the 15th overall selection to the Houston Texans.
And then lastly, in the first round, again, this was another trade. The Lions were originally at 32. They end up trading with the Vikings. The Vikings get seen out of Georgia, which I'm very intrigued by, even if I don't like how they wound up there. So the Lions trade out. Not much you could do about that. But who'd you have going at number 32?
I had Kenny Pickett going 32 to the Lions. Doesn't seem like they're in the market for a quarterback. Maybe in the late rounds, but we'll see. Maybe Zappi or one of those strong, one of those guys. Dan Campbell would get along with them.
Yeah, the Lions are adding some talented pieces. I do like the idea. When we were going through the team needs this week, I said, you know what? I'll take another year, Jared Goff. Try to get your quarterback next year. Goff won't at least embarrass you. He's a veteran. He's a, you know, he's an adult in the room. And they're using these picks to add some talent. The Lions got a good little young core of talent there that they're trying to build in Detroit. So all in all, now look, you didn't do the first the whole first round. You did the first 16 picks, and then you added three others. So you did 19 out of 32. In the end, what were the final results?
I believe I got five picks correct, and however my doing math in my head, what, 14 wrong? 14 wrong there, 15 wrong? So yeah.
14, yeah, 5 and 14.
14 wrong. And I believe Mel Kiper got seven correct in his he did 32 picks, but he still got – Mel still beat me out, Luke. That's what happened.
Well, to be fair, though, seven are from the full first round, right?
Right, yes.
We're going to have to go back and look at Mel Kiper's mock draft and look at just the first 16 picks.
Ooh.
And then 22, 24, 32. And then let's compare because you may have him. Because he
get
has
me
the
excited
luxury
here, Luke.
He has the benefit of this, a whole second half of the first round that we did not do. There's a great website called the Huddle Report that grades most people. I think you have to actually submit your mock draft. And so the Huddle Report grades them. And I could tell you the best mock drafts had 10 correct picks last night in the first round. So that's the best. Trent, you had five. But the best mock drafts, if you're curious like what the standards are, the guys that did the best this year nailed 10 of the 32, which shows you how hard it is. And those were Forrest Long from the Huddle Report. Ron Stewart, also from the Huddle Report. We're going to have to start reading that website. And then Ben Standig from The Athletic. Those were the leaders with 10 picks correct. At the very bottom, the guys that really struggled, two was the lowest number. You had Jamie Eisner from The Draft Network, who had two correct last night. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who had two. Matt Fox from Campus to Canton, who had two. Ben Robinson from Football Outsiders had two. John Vogel from Football Sapient had two. And Hussam Patel had two from Around the Block. In terms of five, that's kind of maybe the lower third of this long list. But it is always interesting to look back and see the guys that did well or did not do well. The ESPN guys do not submit their mocks to the Huddle Report, so I don't know how Mel and McShay match up to some of these other guys. You'd have to do that on your own. But it's always intriguing to see some of the guys, you know, that tote their mock drafts to actually hold them accountable and see how they did.
I got five correct in the first 16. Mel Kiper got three correct in the first 16.
Oh,
there you go.
Take that, Mel. That's right.
Give me that $1 million salary a year.
He got only three of the first 16, huh?
Yeah, you know, and he had, like, Chris Olave at 11, you know, going with that pick, but he had him to Washington. So if we're going on the honor system here, Luke, I think I beat Mel out.
So now here's how they grade it at the Huddle Report. You get a certain number of points for the match if you nail the pick perfectly, and then you get a certain number of points for the player. So if your player got drafted still in the first round, you get points for that. I also think you should get points if you nail the position. Maybe that's too easy, I don't know, but like if you think the Giants are going to draft a lineman and they draft a different lineman, I think you should get partial credit for that. You knew where they were going, you just didn't nail the exact player.
Or you selected the correct player but in the wrong pick.
Yes.
Like, there you go.
But in terms of how they grade these, of course the match is most important, and then the player. If you really swing and miss on a player that doesn't even go in the first round, right, you don't get credit for that. So if we were to grade that way, we'll have to come up with your score as well, because I think all your players went in the first round, did they not?
Yeah, they did. They did. Everybody went.
All right. So you know what? I'm gonna do the math and get you a score and see how you compare it to these other guys, even though you didn't do a full first round. I think the official mock draft of the Morrow Midday Show certainly was far from embarrassing. And that's the main thing. Just don't embarrass yourself. And I don't think it was half bad. I think it was pretty good. Coming up, which of these first-round picks can you trust to come through in the NFL? We'll get to that coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
The first round of the draft's in the books last night. Who can you count on to come through, be successful, work out? Who are the bust and boom candidates? We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We just ran through our entire mock draft that was put together this week by Trent and to try to see how we did, or really how he did, and he nailed five. Now, again, it's hard to compare it to other mock drafts because we did the first 16 picks and then added three others. So only 19 of the 32 picks. But in the first 16 picks, Trent had five correct, nailed them perfectly. And Mel Kiper, who I think is regarded as like the premier draft prognosticator, right or wrong, had only three. Which really, if we're being quite frank, that's pretty poor for somebody who this is their one task. They spend all year getting ready. You nail three out of 16. And I think Bobby actually tweeted that it was three out of 17. Three of the first 17 he tweeted last night. Pretty bad. So now, Trent, you could put that on the resume. You beat out Mel Kiper in the mock draft this year.
No, I feel pretty good about it, Luke, and not a bad life that they live, I realized, over this last 2 weeks, watching film, grinding tape, seeing who's going where. You know, it's interesting. And does Mel Kiper have any inside sources? Because he didn't predict, like, any of the trades actually correct. So I was wondering about, like, his whole process. Maybe we sit down and chat with him.
That's a good point.
Eat some pumpkin pie.
Yeah, every day he eats his pumpkin pie. I have nothing against Mel, but it is interesting how people get into a position where you take them just at their word. You know, like Mel Kiper, yeah, it's true. Mel Kiper has built like a cottage industry, and now it's become such a big deal that there's so many, everybody is in the mock draft game. But for the longest time, it was Mel, and he was on the drafts. And, of course, you probably remember the famous clip of the Colts GM at the time making fun of Mel Kiper for not knowing anything. And there is some truth to that. Like, he's just kind of a guy throwing stuff against, trying to make predictions. Right? But we always, like, take it as gospel. And then last night you find out three of the 17 were actually correct. Point being, nobody knows, other than these teams. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Now, I totaled up the points because you do get points. When they score your mock draft, you get points for getting the player right in terms of the first round. If your player gets drafted in the first round, you get a point for that. If you nail the match, you get 2 points. I feel like you should get more for a match, but nonetheless, that's how it works. So from that scoring system, our mock draft would have 29 points, which would still put us in last on the Huddle Report. However, of course, we only did 19 of the 32 picks, so keep that in mind. We would be tied with Jason Son Adam from Talk Draft. Maybe you should start talking about something else. In terms of the draft, who should we expect to boom or bust out of the first round last night? Later on this afternoon, I'll give you specifics. But I can tell you that when you go back and you look from 2000 until I believe it's 2017, the first round draft picks that were signed to a second contract by their draft team. We can't include the last couple of drafts because they haven't gotten there yet. When you go back and you look, this is just first round draft picks that got a second contract, were good enough to stay on with their team. In terms of the percentage of position players, centers, number one. Offensive tackles, number two. Linebackers, three. Guards, four. So what this data tells you is that the lineman is the safest pick. Offensive lineman is the safest pick in the first round. Bill Belichick is laughing somewhere. Laughing at all of us for the strange pick, no pun intended. Then you get to the edge rushers, get a second contract 45% of the time. Now we get to less than a coin flip. Quarterbacks, 42% of the time. Running backs, 40%. Safeties, 39%. Tight ends, 39%. Cornerbacks, 35%. Defensive tackle, 35%. And wide receivers actually last. Only 27% of wide receivers have signed a second contract with the team that drafted them. Now, I remember when we did this a year ago, we got into a debate with a listener saying, well, that's because the talented wide receivers go out and sign with other teams, skewing the numbers. But then we went back and looked, and really, the only examples we could come up with over the last 20 years, there are only two or three. One of them was Plaxico Burress when he left the Steelers to the Giants. I can't remember off the top of my head the other one or two, but very infrequently does that actually happen. A.J. Brown is an exception. Usually, when you have a young talent, you keep them around. You don't trade them away or let them go in free agency. Maybe more so nowadays, but over the past 20 years, that never really happens. So the data tells us over the last 20 years, the safest first-round picks have been linemen, and the most risky first-round picks have been wide receivers. And last night, we had six wide receivers go in the first 18 picks to set a record. Coming up later on this afternoon, we'll actually get into names. And I'll give you my best guesses of who I think could work out based off of these percentages, the number of players and which ones they would be at these positions, and who may be more of a bust. And we'll do that later on this afternoon. But when we come back, We'll wrap up hour one. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the babies, mamas, mamas. Mamas, mamas. Baby mamas, mamas. Yeah, go like this. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Did you see this name, image, and likeness story? Where we're going to start getting guys holding out. We're going to get NIL holdouts in college sports. Miami's Isaiah Wong, he's entered the transfer portal and also said that if his name, image, and likeness compensation is not increased, I guess that's the threat. If the NIL is not increased, then he's going to enter the transfer portal. So now we're getting holdouts. Imagine if it happens during the season, even. A guy starts sitting out games. We've seen it at the NFL level where players hold out to try to get their money. There was a bit of an issue with A.J. Brown and the Titans leading to that trade last night. Imagine if this starts happening at the college sport level where now college athletes are holding out. We're probably going to get to a point where some of these guys are going to have to take pay cuts to go pro. And these are the unintended consequences. This is the Cobra effect of name, image, and likeness. It's easy to say, yes, of course, these guys should make money off their name and their image and their likeness. Of course, these college athletes should get some sort of monetary compensation for this. And then we go forward with name, image, and likeness. And I was pro name, image, and likeness. But I also warn that we have to make sure that we have some ground rules here. Because this is, as they say, the Cobra effect. Where you don't think about what could come from those decisions. Name, image, likeness, yeah, let these guys earn some money. And now you got pay for play and you have potential holdouts and you're going to have guys that maybe it screws up the whole system and that they're thinking, oh, shoot, I'm going to have to take a pay cut to go pro. It'd be good for college sports, I guess, if you get these kids to stay here longer. But it just changes the whole system. Isaiah Wong, though, threatening, I guess not necessarily Miami, but the companies around the area. Like, if, hey, somebody doesn't chip in and give me more money, I'm leaving. I'm going to try to find somewhere else I can go to get more money. It'll be interesting to see if this becomes a thing at the college level, and especially in season, if guys start missing games over name, image, and likeness. Hour two coming up next. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.